This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Should the Suffolk County Sheriff's Department have known that Philip Markoff, the so-called Craigslist killer, was a suicide risk? That's what many law enforcement officials are debating after Markoff's jail cell suicide over the weekend. Markoff is the Boston University medical student accused of murdering a masseuse in a Copley Square hotel. He had been on suicide watch shortly after he was arrested for the crime, but he was removed from that status more than a year ago, and he remained off suicide watch until he took his own life on Sunday. Suffolk County Sheriff Andrea Cabral says Markoff showed no suicide warning signs. But could a simple computer test have revealed suicidal intentions that guards and a jail psychiatrist didn't see? Matthew Nock says it might. Nock is a psychology professor at Harvard, and he recently developed two short computerized exams that he says have high success at predicting when a person is at risk of attempting suicide. Matthew Nock joins us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Matthew, before we talk about these new tests for predicting whether someone might be a suicide risk, could you tell us a little about how doctors predict now whether a person might be considering suicide? Because I assume that if you're proposing a new test or if you've designed a new test, then the current methods could be better.
Yes, we believe that they can. If one goes to the psychiatric emergency department and is interviewed by a clinician, clinicians often just use whatever person tells them. There's no blood test. There's no brain scan. There's not really any kind of really formal assessment that's done to determine suicide risk. We essentially ask someone, are you thinking of killing yourself? And they tell us yes or no. And we might look at their history and do they have a mental disorder and have they been suicidal before? But it's really based on what a person tells us. And this is problematic because people are often motivated to deny or conceal thoughts of suicide.
In fact, I think you've said in the past that self-reporting, which basically what happens now, as you said, you rely on someone to say, I'm suicidal. That's, you know, hardly a better way of predicting whether someone is thinking about killing themselves than chance.
Not much better than chance, if at all.
So tell us how these new tests would work, you know, how they would actually predict or give away that a person is thinking about suicide.
Sure. So rather than relying on a person's self-report, what we did was administer two computer-based tests that take about 5 minutes to complete, and we have people with laptops in the emergency department, and as patients come in, they complete these quick tests. And what the tests do is use a person's reaction time or response time in responding to different words and images that appear on the screen to measure how they're thinking about suicide rather than relying on what they're telling us.
So if you take this test, how does it work? What does this quick test ask you to do?
So you're seated at a computer and you see words or images and are asked to classify them. And you see words related to life or death. And you see words related to me, things like I, me, mine, or not me, things like they, them, theirs. And what's interesting is for people who are suicidal, words that are suicide-related or death-related capture their attention much more.
And what, again, are some examples of what those sort of death or suicide-related words might be?
The words are simply suicide, dead, and funeral. And the neutral words are words like museum, paper, engine.
And if you linger or choose words like suicide, dead, funeral, you're considerably more likely to be considering taking your life?
Well, if it takes you longer to respond when those words appear, it suggests that you are attending more to those words or potentially thinking more about those words or ruminating about those words, and so it takes you longer to respond.
And then what could that mean for your future?
Well, what we found was the difference in how long it took them to respond to suicide-related words versus neutral words significantly predicted or improved our prediction of who made a suicide attempt in the next 6 months.
So for people who take this test, how much more likely are they to possibly try to take their life?
People who had that association had a six-fold increase in the odds of making a suicide attempt in the next 6 months.
So six times more likely to possibly try to take their life.
Right.
You know, as you've said, these are tests you can administer on a computer in just a few minutes. You know, it sounds so simple, almost too simple. I mean, the mind is such a complex thing that I wonder if someone is having suicidal thoughts, can a computer test really get at a person's thoughts?
We think so. Certainly, suicide is a very complicated outcome, and we don't have a good understanding of why people become suicidal or how that process emerges. But what we're trying to do is capture what we think of as sort of the end stages in deciding to make a suicide attempt. So capture the extent to which a person identifies with suicide or is really thinking about it.
Is there a chance that it would be immediately obvious to the person taking the test what the test is trying to get at? So they would just avoid choosing or lingering on those words? Or is your point that if you're thinking that way, it's almost unconscious and you couldn't help but respond to those certain words?
It's a great question and one that people often ask. It's, I think, one real strength of using performance-based tests like this is that they're much more difficult to fake than self-report. So if I'm thinking of killing myself and you ask me if I am, I can simply say no. And there's really no way that you would know if I was not being truthful. These tests, one could fake the responses, but it's really difficult to do. You'd have to speed yourself up in milliseconds in some instances and slow yourself down in other instances. So it's quite difficult to do.
Matthew Nock, you made a reference earlier to you're trying to take a look at the end stages of that thought about possibly committing suicide. But
right.
Is suicide ever a spontaneous thing? So, you know, it hasn't been on a person's mind for a long time, and one day they just decide, I want out, and a test taken a week ago wouldn't have picked that up.
Very possibly. So, and that's one of the limitations of the approach that we use. What we're doing is capturing people, in many cases, right after they've made a suicide attempt or when they're seriously thinking about suicide, so much so that someone brought them to the emergency department. It's much more difficult to assess these people in instances where the behavior is much more spontaneous. An adolescent who has a breakup and then suddenly decides to kill themselves, there's just not enough time to intervene, and we wouldn't know when to administer these tests. So in some cases, the behavior can be impulsive, and that's a gap that we have to address in our future work.
Why do you find that some suicidal patients want to conceal or misrepresent their mental state, while others might be a cry for help?
Sure, and that's a really great point. So some people who want to kill themselves, who really are 100% sure that they want to end their life, are unlikely to tell other people about it because they don't want to be stopped. They don't want to be intervened upon, and so are unlikely to report it to others. Those who are more ambivalent or aren't sure or want to get help, want to marshal support around them, might let other people know that they're thinking of killing themselves. They may be really thinking of killing themselves, but they're really also not sure about whether they want to engage in the behavior. In the former case, where people really want to kill themselves, they're just not going to tell other people. And one example of this is one recent study found that 78% of people who die in the hospital by suicide deny thinking about suicide in their last communications before death. So it suggests that a majority of people who die in the hospital don't want others to know, don't want them to intervene.
And the point of all of this, I imagine, is to have better ways to not only detect, but then try to prevent future suicide attempts.
That's exactly right. So what we're trying to do is develop a way to, again, measure suicidal thoughts without asking a person, with the goal of intervening before a person engages in suicidal behavior. So, for instance, these tests might be used in the future to make decisions about whether someone is able or ready to leave a hospital. We know that the 2 weeks after a person leaves the hospital is one of the highest risk times for suicide death. So presumably people are telling clinicians in the hospital, I'm okay to leave, I'm not suicidal anymore. And then many go on, unfortunately, to kill themselves shortly after leaving. So tests like this might be used to keep people in treatment who need more treatment.
It sounds like a lot of your research has dealt with people who are already in the psychiatric system and are very fragile. Would these tests also have application for people who aren't already in the psychiatric system? Say, someone who's suffering from severe depression, but who's also still going on with daily life and isn't in a psychiatric facility?
Absolutely. We actually tested these tests in a psychiatric setting because we needed large samples of people who were suicidal and who were going to make future suicide attempts. But our goal for our longer-term research is to make these tests more widely available so they can identify people at risk for suicide before they become suicidal, so we can prevent suicide attempts in the future. So in places like schools, in primary care physician offices, in the military, and so on.
You just mentioned possibly putting them in schools. I wonder if
Yes.
you could possibly use them in prisons. And I ask this because, as you may know, there have been a number of prison suicides in Massachusetts, or suicides by prisoners, and in fact, enough that it's been significantly higher than the national average. So are these tests appropriate for prisoners, or are prisoners facing a whole different set of extremely depressing circumstances that might make them have a different set of factors for possibly considering taking
them? No, I think these tests would be perfectly appropriate for use in prisons. Because they're 5-minute computerized tests, they can be used pretty flexibly, and we can modify the tests based on differences in samples or populations. And I think an important part of these tests is they're getting at how people think about suicide, or the extent to which they think about suicide, regardless of what the causes of the suicidal behavior were. So we're not assessing depression or life stress or results of confinement or feelings of entrapment. Those things all may contribute to suicide in prisons, for example, but that wouldn't influence performance on this test at all.
You know, suicide is something that many people just tend not to want to talk about. But as I understand it, it's actually a leading cause of death in the U.S. and worldwide. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you know exactly how prevalent it is. I mean, how would it compare to cancer or heart disease?
Worldwide, suicide is the 14th leading cause of death currently. So it's not associated with more deaths than, say, cancer. But more deaths in the U.S., more than twice as many deaths as HIV/AIDS. Worldwide, more people die by suicide than by all wars and interpersonal violence combined, which means around the world, we're each more likely to die by our own hand than we are by someone else's.
So having a test that could really help you identify who might be at risk could be hugely valuable.
Absolutely.
Matthew Nock, thank you very much for coming on Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Matthew Nock is a professor of psychology at Harvard University. He's developed two short computerized exams that he says can predict suicidal behavior. If you've got something to say, rants, raves, compliments, criticisms, anything, post a comment on our website, wbur.org/Boston, or tag us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at Radio Boston. Email's fine, too. Our email is radioboston@wbur.org. Or for a low-tech but personal touch, you can leave a message on our listener line at 617-353-1137. That's 617-353-1137. Radio Boston is a production of BUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Meghna Chakrabarty will be back tomorrow. Join us then for more Radio Boston.